Hi, welcome to the Healthcare M&A Podcast. My name is Jared Barraza, and I serve as a senior manager here at Horn. I sit within our capital markets group, and my coverage is of the healthcare industry fairly broadly. So, as part of my job, I am trying to keep up with others in the healthcare M&A community, catching up, comparing notes. I also try to stay abreast. As healthcare being one of the highest regulated industries in the world, on at least what's going on in Washington from a wave top standpoint. Today, towards that end, I am joined by my friend and colleague, Matt Van Drunen. Matt, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Matt Van Drunen. I also am a senior manager with Horn. Jared and I do not work directly with each other. No one tells us to work together, but we actually candidly do a decent amount of networking in the Asheville area together. So we talk about this stuff. And so this conversation may be different than some of his other conversations because it's kind of a we're building on a reputation or a friendship, I guess you could say, that already exists between each other. And so that my background is Medicaid. I work primarily with state governments or local agencies and work around Medicaid financing. And as many of you probably know, there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen. And hopefully I can help, understand how this could impact your world.
Let's do it. Okay. So, as Matt described, I think you're a great guest for the Healthcare M&A podcast, given your expertise in Medicaid financing with the uncertainty that's going on. Our goal today is to go a little bit beyond the headlines towards some facts that you may not know if all you're doing is kind of surfing on the very, very highest levels. So, I guess one of the first questions, and this is maybe a higher level discussion, is just to level set for everyone. There's an $880 billion figure that's being bandied about. Can you explain a little bit in more detail what that entails?
Yeah, so that sounds like a big number. It's very scary. It's the total expenditure or very similar to it from 2023, but it's also a projected future spending, right? Based off of some assumptions, where things are going. So it equates to about 10% over the next 10 years. I have a hunch there's ways to get there without really any of the drastic things proposed, or that that number might change now that people are really understanding what some of those things are. But ultimately, at the end of last week, the Senate passed a similar budget resolution to the House asking for $880 million cuts. So this now goes to the chairman of the House and Energy Committee and his team, who is Brett Guthrie from Kentucky, to try and find those cuts, primarily within Medicaid, while maintaining the House and pillars around it. Fraud, waste, and abuse is a very hot topic. And I think there is fraud, definitely not 10%. There's maybe some abuse, and waste is probably the hardest to define. And that's maybe why people are freaking out. And there may be some self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of like who is freaking out. But at the end of the day, it also is kind of a scary time because we are seeing these layoffs and cuts, and these are real people impacting like our GDP in general. And so it's hard for me to say I'm 100% optimistic when in the short term, I think that there is some pain for some people.
Okay, so let's back up. So the 880 billion is equal to roughly the expenditure in 2023. And so the idea is that if you spread that cut over 10 years, it's roughly a 10% cut every year. But that's dependent on assumptions about demographic shifts, utilization patterns,
Inflation,
inflation,
current
coverage,
technology.
okay, everything. So these are very rough numbers. Now, what you also said is that 880 billion is a number that's in front of the House in terms of, so that's how it made its way there, but how it was determined was, okay, interesting.
So the Government Accountability Office, who may is in theory apolitical, has laid out a number of scenarios of how to get there. I think they had laid out like almost 3 trillion, like $2.7 trillion, I think, was that they had laid out different scenarios. And some of those maybe make sense on the surface, but they have, challenges to them. So I don't know if it's really important to your listeners to go through those, but a lot of what this comes down to is the difference between Medicaid and Medicare. Medicaid is less politically popular than Medicare. Medicare is for old people. So all old people generally like it. They generally vote. It's kind of off the table. They just expanded Medicare Advantage rates at double the percentage of before. So I think Medicare is pretty safe, but Medicaid is often misunderstood. And what really, it's two different programs kind of together. There's the needs-based component, which is based off of income levels. But there's a whole aged, blind, disabled component where in the long-term care space for those people that can't, maybe who need some extra services and supports to survive, Medicaid is the primary payer. And so in 60% of long care situations out in the healthcare environment, Medicaid is the primary payer. The spend down is real. About 20% of people are on Medicaid. For kids, it's like 40%, and it's 50% is public school kids. But it's something like normal people like myself experience with my grandma. I watched my grandparents spend down, and my grandma, get. I appreciated the care she got, but do I think that it could have been maybe better? I don't know. It's hard to say, given the circumstances and everything. But I'm grateful that it was what was provided was provided.
So when you say spend down, the spend down is real. You're meaning elderly folks are exhausting their own financial resources and likely the lifetime Medicare benefit as well. And then you're reverting on to Medicaid. And so
Correct.
there's a mechanism to which the demographic shifts are probably expecting or pointing towards a Medicaid expenditure that's going to increase year over year.
Certainly. Aging population is the number one thing we can't control. Actuarially, obviously, these people living longer is more expensive. So we do get a small anti-human element to survival and curing in this area that I'd rather not get into. It bothers me. But I do think there's some things in the cost curve that like aren't accounted for. It's innovations, but also we have an unhealthy population. I think that some of the Make America Healthy Great things, maybe some of it's out there, but I think as a general census, there is a subpopulation that seems to be growing that takes care of themselves and doesn't want to utilize the system. We purchase health insurance and we don't use. We take care of ourselves through what we eat and what we, how we exercise and what we consume. And I say we because I try to, as a leader, try to not be a hypocrite. Obviously, we all cheat. We drink at working events, networking events occasionally. But yeah, so I think that there's some ability to adjust that cost curve with lifestyle changes at the macro sense. And I think that some of the economic things could influence that too, if things get more expensive on the other side.
Got it. So Medicaid sounds like it's less understood by folks,
It's
and
many programs.
it's also more complicated in that there's a state and federal element. Can you
Yes.
walk us through how the Medicaid financing mechanism works?
Yeah, there's a game within a game, as many things, but essentially at the macro sense, about 70% of costs are covered by the feds and 30 by the state. That's very much nuanced to specific items. The Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid for folks above 100% of the poverty level to like 133 or 137. And those folks are covered at a 90% match. That is a very big economic boon to your local economy in some ways. So 40 states have expanded and are taking advantage of that. That is probably the most contentious area in my, or one of the two most, and probably could save the most by removing it back and shifting those to the FMAP, which is the federal medical assistance percentage. That is from 50 to like Mississippi in the high 77s, like 77.61, maybe if I'm remembering correctly, but that could be last year. And so that whole game of like the costs being covered by the state and feds is really important. So that there's 12 states that have what you call a rollback law, where if they lower that percentage from 90% down, They roll back Medicaid expansion, and so a lot of people could lose coverage. You could see a lot of people shift to, the uncompensated care area of your institution's books. And so I think that's probably not going to happen, most likely because of the 9 of the 12 states being Republican, but we could see changes over time. There's time to do it over time and maybe change those laws too if they had to, but we're just guessing. The FMAP I mentioned is the other side. So there's a floor of 50%, which is the administrative match for consulting, things like that. Some IT consulting, which probably won't change, is like 90% as well. But the Deloittes and Accentures play in that space. And so I have a hunch, even though there's probably some gamification there, it'll remain unchanged. But that FMAP is really the scary thing, I think, for some states. So
So if I'm hearing you right, the top state that the highest it's going right now is a 90% match. And it could go down to 77 or anywhere from 50 to 77. Is that
For that population, yeah,
okay?
if they remove the expansion match. Now, that 50 to 77, there's some proposed revisions to that calculation, and part of it could remove the floor. And there are like a half a dozen states, I think as high as 8, I've seen in one model, that where if you remove the floor of the calculation, instead of being at 50% and having to match like 50 cents for 50 cents, now they've got to match like 60 cents to get 40 back. They're not even getting their full dollar amount back. So that's very different than a state where you've got maybe a 70% match is like your base FMAP. And so you're putting up 30 and you're getting another 70. And so it is really the politics or the meta politics of this being local and what we're seeing play out and why there is all the posturing, why at 4 in the morning on Saturday, did they make everybody vote on an amendment to move the 880 to 5 billion? Because they wanted people to have it on the record with this. Because ultimately, like every dollar that gets cut from the federal budget on Medicaid must be cut at the state level or supplemented by the state budget, right? And so
Okay.
you're talking about either removing coverage or massive revenue shortfalls. Whatever, different states are in different financial strands, but I think a lot of states are looking at this, and there's probably only a handful that are not like worried
Okay. So, all right.
of that change. And that makes it so scary, in my opinion, that it won't happen.
Okay.
But I'm just guessing. We're just guessing. We're just having fun.
Yeah, we are. Okay, so the 880 billion of cuts is expecting to include some measures about this match concept.
Potentially. Those are like the big headlines you're seeing when they say like so many people will lose coverage. That's where they're coming up with the scary headlines.
Okay.
What we will see happen, but probably or maybe to some level, like work requirements, the idea that, in order to be non-age blind disabled or like not a primary caregiver of a child or someone, you have to work or go to school or volunteer. That is potentially coming. And what remains to be seen is whether that will be required or optional. Under the previous administration, it was not allowed, and states would have liked to do it. And there's a world where, if we have work requirements allowed, that expansion population may happen in some of those states where it has not. If they keep the 90% match and they add the work requirements, maybe it makes expansion in some of these states palatable. I don't know. We'll see. But if they keep that game and they don't remove it from other people, how long can you tell your citizens that you're leaving these federal dollars on the table? I don't know.
Okay, this is fascinating. All right.
I mean, it's all economic development in a way, right? I've seen studies earlier in my life where like public health dollars circulate through the economy 9 times a year.
Yep.
And I don't know, compared to other things, it's probably pretty fast.
Yeah, okay. So what we're going to need to do is stay up to date on what is being deliberated with the House in the Senate to come up with the resolution or the agreement on where these cuts are going to come from.
They could just be "We promise."
Okay.
There's ways to get there, I think, because again, that number is projected future costs with a lot of probably assumptions in it. I'm sure they've done, like your type of Monte Carlo thing where you look at a number of versions of a scenario and come to a most likely, but I think that could be changed. And so I would expect we see one thing that will change that is also political, and you'll hear a lot talked about, is the concept of a provider tax. And it does play into that whole FMAP state federal share game, but it's a very specific instance, and it's a very common thing where the state will tax providers a certain percentage of dollars, right? And that dollar amount is then they use an intergovernmental transfer to match that with the federal funds and then pay that back out to the providers. Essentially, you can pull down the federal share without costing more state dollars, is what's going on. There's caps on it. I think it's like maybe 6% at right now, but that could go down. There was a time when it was uncapped, and it was the Wild West. And so we'll see. It really comes down to if you want to cut the income tax, can you shift some of your expenses to the feds from your state budget? There's a lot to it, probably more than we should be talking about.
Well, that's a great, I guess, summary, if you will. Yeah, you're right. There's plenty more to go into. Let's shift just briefly into the HHS restructuring that we heard about recently. Can you talk, I guess, again, beyond the headlines, what do we know? What don't we know?
A lot of people got laid off, unfortunately, but there is someone who's seen restructuring, been a part of restructuring in other lives. There's some of it that could be said and makes sense. They're combining some of these grant, like HRSA, like SAMHSA. There's a couple agencies being combined into Make America Healthy Again. They're going to repurpose those funds, most likely issue them out in different ways. So we're going to see that happen. What didn't get very much cut, I think, is important to this conversation, though, and maybe that's the most important comment I would make. A lot of that grant stuff and those funds were cut, but Medicaid or CMS in general, Medicare and Medicaid services, I think they had like a 300 person cut. That's relatively small to the few. I think it was closer to 20,000 at the macro level.
Okay. Yep.
So
That's
we're gonna.
interesting. Okay.
I hesitate to even say this, predict it, but I would imagine those funds could come out in larger block grants. Under the previous structure, it was a lot of administrative effort for this very specific grant and that very specific grant. And you're running a Department of Health with hundreds of grants, maybe, and if you were able to get a block grant where you could have up. Apply that to your local population's most pressing health needs, as opposed to what the grant says you need to spend it on for this specific one specific piece. It might open up the possibility for public health agencies, departments of health, to really go after some key local nuance things with greater budget power and reduce some of the administrative effort that goes into managing all of those smaller grants.
Wow. Okay. So when we see headlines again that say slashing of funding, well, yes, maybe, but also it could be repurposed and redistributed in a way that is a little bit even more flexible.
Yes.
Wow. So
You
that's
and I were at an event maybe about a week ago, and we heard a Department of Health person, someone who is the head of a Department of Health, talk, and he somewhat alluded to this. He was not as worried as some folks I see online. And so I think we can take that as a sign that yes, that it sucks in the short term, but we'll probably weather this public health storm.
I was also struck by that. I'm curious, you've made a little bit of mention to this. If there are particular states that you feel might be more heavily impacted, or conversely, what states do you think are most impervious to of vicissitude with funding?
I mean, it's the state we're sitting in, or here in Tennessee, has a block grant, which kind of allows them some of that flexibility. And they've been consistently met their goals to get the shared savings. So I think they're probably insulated. Mississippi has also not expanded, and they've been pretty fiscally responsible from my perspective, and they've got the highest FMAP. They're probably going to be okay. I know there's some provider tax stuff everywhere, so I think that's just it. But that's a small piece. I think they can work that out if it happens.
Wow.
But I would say states in a similar, and you want to know the opposite, would be the states that are at that FMAP floor. It's some big states. Maybe the two biggest states are at that FMAP floor, New York and California. And California is in a precarious situation just in general because they expanded Medicaid to the undocumented and covered it 100% with state dollars. And that's cost them maybe more than the actuarial projections. And so they've had to cover that. And I'm not so sure if there's like, if they were thinking they could get a waiver to cover those state costs at some point, but under the current environment, that's probably unlikely. And so they're facing a double-edged sword of what do we do with this undocumented CalAIM expenditure? And if, our FMAP drops to 40%, how do we come up with like another 50, $90 billion?
Wow. Okay. So yeah, that's one reason why Medicaid is so hard to understand, because there's 50 plus different
Yes.
laboratories on how to manage that money. Well, this has been very interesting, and we'll probably continue these types of conversations. But obviously, I really appreciate you taking some time. And I guess what I'm hearing is, beyond the headlines, there's certainty as much as uncertainty. There's always stroke of the pen risk. We'll see with Congress. I think that's probably one of the bigger areas of uncertainty, is how, if any of those cuts are actually going to be real versus promises. Super enlightening on how the cut number was determined in the first place. Also super enlightening about how the Medicaid financial machine works. I guess another thing that I tend to, and maybe I'm just an optimist here, but reading the headlines, going beyond that in all of my conversations with you, if you're a provider of healthcare services and you keep your nose clean, you are not in the fraud, waste, abuse category, you probably don't have anything to worry about.
For the most part, probably not. You should know your local situation, follow, wherever your entities are, know what's going on there. Are you an expansion state? Is your state looking at a work requirement? In those work requirement, the waiver to get one, it will show you the state's assumption on budget neutrality, which will include the percentage of people that they expect to lose coverage. And so, if you're expecting, say, like a quarter of your expansion population to be non-compliant with the work requirement, and you know that, 60% of your patients at your hospital are Medicaid eligible, your worst case scenario is 25% of that 60 goes to uncompensated care, right? They're not going to pay their bill when they show up. Again, that's assuming every one of those your 60% is an expansion eligible person as well, which they won't be. But there's back of the envelope math you should prepare for if that is the case, and you can start thinking about. But I would not freak out. Let the politicians freak out. Let the people on the news freak out and read the actual bill.
Wow, that's great. That's great advice. Well, again, thank you so much for your time and your insights on the Healthcare M&A podcast. Those who are interested, please feel free to contact us through the Horn website, horn.com, horncapital.com. You can find us there. And we'll look forward to talking with you next time. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks, Jared. Enjoyed this.